Good morning, everyone. Can you all hear me okay? So I just wanted to take a moment and thank you all for inviting me here, Mark for inviting me, and also people on the Social Justice Committee that have been supporting our work at the Capitol, advocating for fair wages. So today I'll be talking to you all about fair wages, an issue that is very personal to me and something I'm very passionate about. First, I just wanted to read a quote from one of my favorite activists, Cesar Chavez. History will judge societies and governments and their institutions not by how big they are or how well they serve the rich and the powerful, but by how effectively they respond to the needs of the poor and the helpless. And this quote is one that resonates with me a lot, and that I find that we're not doing a great job right now. One of the core goals at Raise the Wage is to highlight the stories of people struggling to get by and empowering people to share their stories and experiences and know that they're valid experiences. So in the spirit of that, I want to share my story today with you all. My family immigrated here from Oaxaca, Mexico. They have deep ties to that area. They're indigenous from the area. I don't know if any of you have gone to Oaxaca, a beautiful state. Lovely mountains, great cultural traditions, and also it's a place where you eat grasshoppers. they grew up in a small town in Oaxaca, a really small town of about 200 people. So there was a great sense of community there. There's an idea that you help feed your neighbors and that you help one another. And so my parents grew up in a very happy home, but at the same time, they had a lot of dark memories from growing up in the era with so much poverty. My father was in a really impoverished home. Two of his siblings died because of malnutrition when they were younger. My dad started working at the age of 8, moving to different states in Mexico to pick tomatoes and help his family and provide for his family. Each year he would go further north, so he later on went to Baja California, then moved to California, picking strawberries there, and then going to Oregon and Washington. And he would do that seasonally, so he would go in summers to the U.S. to pick berries and save money to provide for the families. And after my brother and I were born, he decided that it would be really difficult to continue to do that for various years. So we settled in Oregon after that, and I called Oregon my home after that. I grew up in Salem. My dad picked berries, strawberries, blueberries, raspberries in the Willamette Valley area. And so I grew up in the farms. My parents didn't have enough money to provide or to pay for child care, so a lot of the times I would go with them in the farms, and I would sleep in the car, and then after it got light, I would go outside with them and just hang out in the farms. And my mom, I remember, she would make houses out of the crates for the sun, and to protect me from the sun. So I grew up in the farms, and as I grew older, then I started to stay with my siblings at home. I took care of them, I helped clean our house. And once I turned 12, I myself started working in the farms, picking blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, in order to help my family. A lot of the money that I got, I just gave to my parents because I knew that they needed help. And with farm work, it's very difficult to pay for everything throughout the year, especially because it's very seasonal. So a lot of the work that we were able to do during the summer has helped us pay for bills throughout the year and help pay for my school supplies, my clothing, and then just helped pay for food and rent throughout the year. So currently, there's a lot of talk at the Capitol about excluding farm workers, restaurant workers, or doing exemptions for training wages. So giving youth a lower wage than the current minimum wage. And, I just, hearing stories, I feel that it's not the right thing to do. Personally, from my story, I worked at a young age, but I was up every morning at the same time as my parents were. I was, you know, in the fields from 5 to 5 each day, and I was working hard because I knew that I had to provide for my family also. And I hear, you know, other stories like that my dad, he's now not working in farms anymore, but he's working at a meatpacking company. He's been working there for various years now. And he wakes up at 4 every morning, gets back at around 5 and 6. And even then, so many years of, you know, working in that environment, he's still not earning enough. It's earning just a little above the minimum wage. So that's after various years, you know. And then I think of, you know, through this work, I've been able to hear a lot of people's stories and see their experiences of, you know, struggling to get by. I talked to a lady about a week ago, and then she expressed, you know, her story that she also immigrated from Mexico fleeing domestic violence. And here in the U.S., you know, she came with the hopes of being able to provide with her children with a safer environment and somewhere where they could, you know, flourish and succeed. Other than that, and, you know, in Mexico where they were struggling because of their abusive father. And then she's been working 2 jobs for various years, and even then, you know, struggling to pay for rent. And aside from that, also, she's not having the time to spend with her children. So her children have started to get in trouble, coming from, you know, abusive homes, started getting into drugs. Her daughter got in trouble in school, went to juvie, and, you know, that all falls from not having enough time to spend with their kids. And then after that, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And even with, like, going through chemotherapy and, you know, having to go through the pain of going through that process, she would still have to go to work because who else would pay for rent and who else would pay for the food? So, you know, stories like those just really highlight that, you know, it's not right that workers are getting paid less for the work that they're doing. You know, each work has its dignity, each work is important in our society. And I also was talking to my sister's friend. One of her sister's friend is also a teenager. She's working, going to school. She's a straight-A student. She's a student government. She's doing athletics. And she's doing really well. But in addition to that, she's also working. And then she's stretched very thin because she comes from a single-parent home. She's having to work and help with her family at the same time, and she's also undocumented, so she needs work to be able to pay for college. And she's been going to work to be able to do that, but at the same time, you know, she's having to be torn between helping at home or doing well at school or doing work. And then, to, you know, to hear that some of our legislators are wanting to exempt teenagers because there's a lot of myths about, you know, who a minimum wage worker is. That, you know, it's a teenager trying to make an extra buck, and you hear stories of, you know, like myself, trying to help and provide for the family, and our incomes are important for our families. And so, when legislators advocate for exemptions and training wages, they're really telling us that our work has no value, that there's no dignity in our work, and that's just plain not true. As I reflect in my background, in my history, and I think about, you know, what defines me and what defines my community. I think of 2 words, which is community and respect. And I think of, you know, community in the sense that in our town, when someone died from the community, the whole town mourns. They ring the bell at the church and the whole town mourns because we're all connected to each other and we all try to help each other. And as I look at you all today, I also see, you know, community and helping one another and, you know, celebrating with each other and at the same time mourning with each other through your sorrows. And I think of the wider society is also a community. And so I think that, you know, as a community, we should all be doing well. And if our neighbor isn't doing well, then it affects us also. And I, you know, we need to return to a place where we think of each other as a community, we see each other as neighbors. And we see our issues as intersecting and, you know, helping our neighbor, helping our community as a whole. And so, to finish off, I want to read another. This is a Travis quotes today, just to be the bookend. So, once social change begins, it cannot be reversed. You cannot uneducate a person who has learned to read. You cannot humiliate the person who feels pride. You cannot impress the people who are not afraid anymore. We are seeing the future, and the future is ours. So as I read this, I see that, you know, that now is the time to raise the wage. It's threatened to do, as I hear these stories, you know. It's important that we move forward and that we are able to help our community. And so thank you so much for, you know, being here and taking the time to chat with me. I will be around, so if you want to learn more about our work or see how you can help with this issue, I've been really welcomed here, and I see that sense of community here, so it's great to see that, you know, aside from my home, I can see, you know, communities flourishing outside of there and being able to be welcomed to different communities. So thank you so much, and thank you for allowing me this space today.